Today I have to talk about Arizona and by extension our society and our larger world. So this talk is about sticks and stones and bones. It's a heartbreaking story, what happened in Arizona yesterday, but it comes out of a context about words and images. Sticks and stones do break bones, and words can hurt us. Words can cause bones to be broken, hearts to be broken, lives to be broken, and whole societies to be shattered. If I did not believe in the power of words, I would not do what I do. If I thought that words just flew off into the ether and never touched a heart, never made a difference, I would not teach 5 classes a semester. I would not write 3 newspaper columns. I would not preach 3 out of 4, 4 out of 5 Sundays. I believe in the power of the word to build or to destroy, to enhance how a person feels about himself or herself, to give people a sense of power, of responsibility, of meaning, or to rob them of all of those important things. Words at their best inspire us. They move men and women and mountains. They change society. They implant courage. They convey wisdom. Or they can wreck a heart and a soul with a word: careless, thoughtless, stupid, opportunistic. Our words make a difference. There's a reason that in the beginning was the word, the idea that what makes us human is our ability to think, to choose the right word, to avoid the wrong word, to think about what the impact is that we are going to have on other human beings. We have reached a kind of toxic tipping point in our society, and it's a point we've been at before. There have been other times when there has been widespread incivility. There is nothing new. What is new is our ability to disseminate the poison, to infect people with our anger, with our hatred, with our fears, with our projections, and to move them to see the other as the other and not as a fellow human being. We have created a society where not only am I right and you are wrong, but I am right and you are evil. And you are not even fully human if you disagree with me. Please take that in the context in which it's offered, which is all about context. The intent means something, but so do the words, so do the images. When we look at what happened yesterday, and a congresswoman being shot through the head, and all of those other innocent people shot and killed, we can use this as a Rorschach test and say, well, you know, it's Sarah Palin's fault because she used a target on certain districts. The same kind of target that was used on Dr. Tiller, who was eventually assassinated. Those targets are icons. They are inflammatory. They incite violence. We can use it as a Rorschach to say, well, yeah, it's about guns. Who needs an automatic weapon with the 24-bullet magazine or a semi-automatic weapon? We can make it about our mental health care system and our inability to give people the kind of help that they need. We can make it about right-wing talk radio. We can make it about, well, there isn't any really left-wing talk radio, but if there were, we could make it about that, because while most of the hate speech, most, not all, at the moment, comes from the right side of the spectrum. That's not chiseled in tablets of stone. It can come from the left. It did come from the left in the 60s and 70s. The word pig came trippingly to the tongue in the 60s to dehumanize an adversary. And that's what we do. We dehumanize the adversary. We don't really have adversaries. We have enemies. Some people brag. No, you're not my adversary. You are my enemy. Rush Limbaugh brags about that. That's wrong. It's wrong morally. It's wrong psychologically. And it is toxic to the body politic. Arrogance and condescension and the creation of some inferior, morally inferior other is how we kill people. Most people in the world, across political, ethnic, religious spectrums, are good and decent people. And how is it that we then are able to oppress the stranger, to persecute the other? By making them not fully human, and it starts with words. I suppose we could argue that it starts with pictures and it starts with images, and that's also true because the words and the pictures are connected. So you don't have a discussion about immigration. You have a discussion about a them. Vermin. Infesting good, decent people. And I'm not just talking about the conversation, argument, iconography of evil that goes on along our borders, but other nations also, in Africa, in the Middle East, the marginalization of the other and the use of animal and insect metaphors. Those are powerful, destructive, and toxic. The words, the pictures in our heads condition how we respond. We live in a society that is violent, that celebrates it. It's in our metaphors, it's in our games, it's in our wars, it's in our language. And the language makes a difference. We have children who practice violence in our video games. I'm not making arguments for censorship, I'm making arguments for sense. You can't be involved in teaching and not understand the power of repetitive action, of what you do on a screen to dehumanize another, how easy it is to pull a trigger and not believe that you can pull that trigger in another venue and maybe you can just push a button and reset and they'll pop up and be alive again. We can look at what happened societally in terms of just language. Look at who we seldom fight human beings. We fight enemies. We fight commies and Jerry's, and we can use all of the various ethnic slurs across the line for Jews, for Muslims, for Asians, for Mexicans. Right now there's a big controversy over the N-word and Huckleberry Finn. It's an important conversation. It's an important conversation. And there are two sides to it. I happen to be against editing because I don't want to put fig leaves over our racist past. I think we have to deal with the racial challenges that we have. But there are honorable opposing points of view that are not stupid. When we turn our adversaries into enemies and we attack their humanity and their sense, we perpetuate the problem that I at the moment am decrying. When we look at political rhetoric in this country, even not the horribly toxic, which I'll get to, but just the mildly toxic, Democrats are almost always portrayed as somehow not being as loyal and militaristic and love their country as much as Republicans, and Republicans are almost always portrayed as not as bright and intellectual as Democrats, and this was the argument, of course. Eisenhower was no intellectual, and Reagan was no intellectual, and Bush was no intellectual. Well, Democrats if you keep getting beaten by morons, you're doing something wrong. I mean, you know, re-examine your principles here. Use Jennifer's model of do the counter-argument. Look, most people in our political process are neither stupid nor evil. Most people in our political process do not want the destruction of the United States economically, fiscally, or physically. Most people are good and decent, and we get caught up in the madness and the fear, and it operates from both sides. Yes, I said earlier, at the moment, most of the noise is coming from the right, but there are environmental terrorists, there are animal rights terrorists, people who use a phrase called by any means necessary. And as soon as that phrase is used, it's an alert that someone's humanity is being taken away because of a cause. It may be that we have to fight wars. We could argue that. It may be that human beings are condemned by having been the successful carriers of DNA out of the primordial soup to get to this point, and that contention is a part of who we are. But we have choices in how we contend with each other and with our society. And we dare not repeat instead of repair the problem. On the website of the Los Angeles Daily News, where I blog op-ed, I had to pull a comment off the comment string that was basically encouraging violence against a certain former president and vice president. Now, however much you may not like a former president or vice president, and I won't name them, it is okay to say I disagree. I don't like, I don't trust, I think you're a crook, I think all of those. It is not all right to say somebody should pick up a claw hammer, somebody should pick up a gun, somebody should do an act of violence. The echo chamber of anger that we have created with our high-tech ability to kill and wound each other, our high-tech ability to communicate our fears, our projections, our outrage, across the world in only seconds without a moment's thought, lets us marginalize human beings and make them less than human. Words and theology all have ramifications. When my friend at seminary said to me, "John, I'm sorry you're going to go to hell," I admitted that I wasn't crazy about the air conditioning of hell and the climate, but I wondered why. And he tried to explain that to me, and I tried to explain to him that theology has ramifications. If we have a position that God hates you, why should I be decent to you? We have these people walking around misrepresenting Baptists as much as Al-Qaeda misrepresents Muslims, saying God hates fags and showing up at funerals of military soldiers. This is wrong. This is part of a problem where we have turned away from looking and finding the humanity in other people. That there are others who come to us with different religions, political philosophies, viewpoints, experiences is true. But that can be nourishing. That can be enriching. That's what we are looking for here. That's our ideal, is to find an other and sit down and find out what we have in common, what nourishes that other person, what feeds their soul. We don't have to think alike to love alike. We don't have to think alike to help another person from falling or to help them stand up if they have fallen. We come together in community to be a corrective one to another in a gentle and open-hearted and open-minded way. Does it mean that I'm saying that every silly, crazy idea is equal to every other? No. There's a test. And the test is, how we treat other human beings. If we look at them and see someone who is less than human, we better check our own humanity. There is a line in the gospel. It is so easy to see the mote in someone else's eye and not the log in our own. This is not about being left or right politically. This is about being right or wrong morally. We can step back from the brink, but we have to recognize in ourselves as well as in others when lines get crossed. Last night I listened, and it's what made me make up my mind to throw out my sermon, okay, to preserve my sermon and to write another one. I listened to Keith Olbermann's special comment, and it was very powerful, but it was missing something. You cannot decry the rhetoric of others and see it as dangerous as it is without recognizing that when you say someone is the worst person in the world, that that has an impact also. Respect works in two ways. It isn't I agree with that other person. It is I will not ridicule, marginalize, and exile from my heart the humanity of another person. Now, is it possible to wear out your license as a human being? It is possible, but our threshold is way too low in this society. Our tolerance for the other is way too low. Our goggles, what we put on in order not to see the humanity of the other, is much too distortive of what reality is. Most people in this world, across the political, racial, ethnic, religious spectrums, are good and decent. Most people who disagree with me rationally and politely. You would not know this if you went on the web and followed the conversation strings on everything from the most important social issues to the most trivial issues of taste. You will find strings of people calling each other morons, perverts, self-haters, every kind of label you can come up with. The civility and respect that we owe one another as human beings is ebbing, and part of it is the anonymity of a large society, the isolation that we can put ourselves into, the echo chamber that we are only with each other that lets us look at the other and say, boy, they really are pretty weird, instead of asking, what is it that they have that can be spiritually nourishing and inspiring to me? The great challenge of this world right now is not to create bigger, scarier categories of otherness, not to round up the usual suspects, if you are on the left, to find it on the right, if you are on the right, to find it on the left, but to try to reach across the middle. Hatred and violence, it's not rational. What happened to this judge was not about this judge. What happened to this congresswoman was not it was about the campaign more than it was about what her voting record is. She's a blue dog, admits being a blue dog. Her positions on immigration would not be mine. She's a centrist. This rage came out of a different place, a place that says, it really is okay to be angry. It really is okay to be outraged. It really is okay to shout epithets at other people instead of reaching out to try to understand each other. Efforts to understand will sometimes be rejected. Our goodwill will sometimes not be understood or accepted. But we have immense power to try to make that difference intentionally. When someone throws an epithet, When someone throws an epithet, we have a choice. We can let it fall. All of our reflexes are to grab it, to take it personally, to let it hurt. But we have some choice to go back and say, are you having a bad day? What is it that's making you angry or fearful? Why are you sitting in judgment and hurling epithets at someone who you think is far different, far other from you? Are there, and I know this gets a lot of satire, are there teachable moments that we have when we meet criticism with embrace? I think there are, and they're difficult, and they take the discipline of not grabbing the anger, but looking at its source. There's no way to make it 100%, but we each can make choices day by day to see the complexity, to feel the pain, to reach across the chasm, because the fabric of our society is being rent by incivility, by anger. And we stitch it together with our own individual acts of kindness, more, far more than simply marginalizing some other that is our moral inferior. We are the same species, whatever our colors, religions, politics. And we have so much more in common to share and to nourish each other with. That is our challenge, to see it, to reject the words and the icons of hate, and to try to find and build a more goodly society, starting not with them out there and their problem, but starting with my heart and my soul and my rage and my fear and my own steps towards healing.